Hi, I'm Ambika Gautampai. I'm a writer, I'm a mom of two little babies, and the sort of person who just cannot stop thinking. You are listening to Corner Office Breakdowns, a podcast that reconciles humanity and the workplace. Here we dive into conversations that usually happen in whispered tones or behind closed doors and bring them to the center, contemplating and breaking down the way leading and living have historically been done and rebuilding them together. Corner Office Breakdown sits at the intersection of business and leadership, equity and emotion, parenthood, womanhood, personhood, and as crazy as it sounds, the meaning of life. All of the guests you will hear from are people who have fundamentally changed my outlook. They may shift yours too. Thank you so much for being here. I hope you like this podcast. I hope you love it. I hope you share it. And I hope you subscribe. A few months ago, I was on Instagram minding my own business, and I stopped when I saw a stark black and white post that just said, "I really love making money." And the caption read, "Making money is one of my favorite activities. Does this resonate for you?" And I swear I started clamming up. My relationship with money is fraught, to say the least. And I think our relationship as a culture to money is fraught as well. On one hand, we are obsessed with wealth. We watch rich people, how they buy their houses, the things they eat and drink, how they lose weight, what they're wearing, who their friends are, what music they're listening to, and there is something just so fascinating and addictive about it. But when it comes to our own relationships with money and wealth, it's distasteful to talk about. Even though we are now getting to a point where people are openly saying we should talk about money, post your salary online, compare with your friends to make sure you are making the money you deserve, when it comes to stating that you want money, you want wealth, you want to be able to buy anything you want, maybe you want a nice car or a really big house, for some reason we shy away from that want and we consider the desire for money to be something vapid and shallow. The post I'm referencing came from Sarita Walsh. She is a being coach, an ex-graphic designer whose content I have been following for a very long time. And that post of hers struck me so hard because I instantaneously went to a place of judgment. I judged. I felt like there was something cringy about it. And then when I realized it was Sarita, I was like, wait, there's something deeper here. There's something I'm not understanding. And there's something I need to understand about my reaction to this post. As I quit my job at Mechanism, took unpaid leave to write, and now have re-entered the workforce, money has been a hot topic in life. My husband and I just bought a new car. We're thinking about where our next home is going to be as the kids get older. And everything comes down to money. So why is it that when we start to think about money or talk about money, the feelings that come up are usually fear or guilt or shame or scarcity? I don't know. And that is where this conversation with Sarita began. From that single post, thinking about the role money plays in our life and how it is such a tool of power and poison at the same time. This is episode 2 of season 2 of Corner Office Breakdowns with Sarita Walsh. I hope you enjoy it. Sarita, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on Corner Office Breakdowns.
I have been a follower of yours and a reposter of your content for quite some time because you have this ability to take the human condition and translate it into these beautiful design systems and graphics that make them feel a lot more digestible and a lot more palatable, and takes them out of the realm of kind of like intellect and academia and into like humanity. And so I've been fascinated by your work. I've been fascinated by kind of seeing your journey through what you post. And I remember, like, I don't even know, a year ago, I was like, I just would love to hear your story in a DM. And you're like, yes, I would love to tell you my story. And then we never heard your story. And so I'm thrilled and very grateful to be hosting you. And we are going to be talking today about one of our most hated and most compelling topics in our human lives of money, the power of money, the kind of poison of money, the pleasure of money, and why it is that something so fundamental to our society and something kind of everyone needs to live has become so fraught with ego and power and distaste and hatred. When really it's just something that helps us keep our world going round. But before we get into all of that, I would just love to share with everyone a little bit about you. Like, what is Sarita's story?
So, first of all, thank you for noticing, and thank you for inviting me to be in this conversation. And I am just really in awe by the way that you articulate yourself. Just
Thank
then,
you.
it was just like, I'm like, wow, I could listen to you all day. So
Oh, thank you.
I may end up interviewing you instead.
No, it's a
So,
conversation back and forth.
okay, a little bit about me. I was a graphic designer and I quit my job back in 2021 and transitioned into coaching. And now I kind of refer to myself as a being coach. And this is kind of also has been a really fascinating experience for myself, calling myself something that requires explanation. You know, it's like I'm kind of like, what is a being coach? And will people understand what it is? And I think that in some ways, it has provided me with an opportunity to actually invite them to sit down and be in conversation with me. And that is what being is, being together and experiencing one another. So in some ways, I don't even need to explain it. It's more of an invitation for them to co-create an experience with me. So in some ways, today is really about being, and we get to create that magic together.
Yes, I love that. And what was it in your life that pushed you to transition from being in graphic design? I mean, I'm in advertising, and so I understand the currents of the creative industry very well, and the goods and the bads and the ups and the downs. What was the moment in which you realized what you were doing wasn't serving you? And why did you feel called to one, be this coach or this guide for people? And two, how did you make that leap?
So I remember moving to New York and receiving this invitation for an interview at this place. And I went for an interview, and the scarcity mindset was like, I got to accept this job without, trying anything else because, hey, I've just moved here. I need the money. This is perfect. The place looks great. People look seems great. So I said yes. And they're really, really just fantastic people. I said yes, but I remember the first day that I started my job, I knew this was not for me. Like I just knew it. And I stayed there for 7 years. Yep. It
Wow.
took me 7 years. And I do have to say that the reason being is that the people are incredible. Like, the
Yes.
people are just so, values are aligned with mine. Mm-hmm. And the pay was great. They really
Oh,
take
yeah.
good care of their people. Mm-hmm. What didn't land for me was the work.
Yeah.
And I think that deep down, even though I didn't have the language for it then, it was what was missing for me was loving service. So really being of service, really creating impact, really sitting down with someone and connecting deeply in a conversation and helping them to get to where they want to go. And so, you know, eventually after 7 years, after wanting to quit for so long, I know. And this is when I threw money at my problem, right? To collapse the timeline of my success by hiring a coach and like,
yeah,
let me collapse that 7 years that I didn't act
yeah.
to really going in action. But I quit my job, and before I quit, I made sure that I have enough savings, right?
Yes.
So that I can really just not come from a place of scarcity again. And I save enough for me to have 6 months.
Yeah.
And when I first, you know, live a life of unemployment, it was really about inviting myself to just do the things that I love and see what unfolds. And what I noticed was every day it was just, first I choose myself, I do yoga, I meditate, I journal, I just connect deeply with myself. And then I'll sit under the tree that I have in my home, and just being under the sun and reading. And that's all I did all day.
That
and
sounds then, like bliss.
It's
absolute
amazing.
Bliss.
And then I'll go out in the sun to meet up with friends for coffee and get lunch outside and reading in the park and drawing and painting. And that's literally all I did for a couple of months. And I remember the first, say, 6 weeks, I was like, the voice comes up as, I should be looking for what I'm going to do next. I should be thinking about how I'm going to make money. I should think about, you know, there were so many shoulds that comes up that I started to feel like this is robbing my joy in this moment. And what I did was I decided to say, all right, I'm going to take a break for 4 months. So I think it was like April 1st or April 15th or something like that. I won't do anything until then. I have the permission to just not think about it. And it was really helpful for me to create that context for myself and commit to that, because then I just keep doing what I love, enjoying myself. And as I experience being present and not needing to, you know, anticipate what I'm going to do or regret what I've done, just being in the here and now, I started to realize that, oh, I really love psychology. Like, I love the human minds. Now it makes sense why I love going to therapy. It's actually my desire to learn. It's like, I'm okay with it because the learning was exciting. And so then I'm like, oh, maybe I'll go back to school. And I remember sharing that with my partner. And instead of having the typical, like, I anticipated him saying, are you sure you're going to go back to school? Are you sure you're going to be able to do, you know, like a PhD and all that, right?
Yeah.
He was like, that's a great idea. So when he responded that way, I was like, wait, you really think I can do that? Because back then I did not believe in myself at all.
Oh my goodness.
And he would say, you're such a great designer. Why don't you do like a workshop or jump on calls to do consulting? And I was like, oh, no, that's not a possibility. There's no way I'm jumping on a call with someone. Who am I to share what I know? I don't know enough. I'm so scared of speaking with people, leading a workshop. No way. So my world was really, really small. And when I went, I took like an introduction to psychology course by Yale, and that was so exciting for me. And I genuinely was going to back to school to do this.
Yeah.
And then I hired myself a coach.
Tell me.
And I hired myself a coach that I cannot afford.
Mm-hmm.
It was $25,000 for 10 sessions. I have never spent that amount of money on anything. And the most I've ever spent on myself was $4,000 on a MacBook Pro from my graphic design work.
Yeah.
That makes me a lot of money back, but like it was so difficult for me to make
yes,
that,
I
that
completely
investment.
understand.
So it's bananas for me to consider spending $25,000 on a 10 session with my coach.
Yeah.
And that was when I truly accelerated everything in my life and collapsed the timeline of my success. And it changed my life forever.
Oh my goodness, I have chills.
My friend actually, when I shared it with her, because I was someone who really rushed through my words because I'm terrified of having attention be placed on me. So when I start to tell a story and people start looking at me, I'm like, just, and then I don't make sense. And I just, you know, and it just like word vomit. And I remember that evening we were having sort of like a kind of like a Friendsgiving kind of gathering. And I shared with some of my close friends very quickly that I've decided to hire a coach. It's this much. And he's really great. And just kind of like rap, like just didn't really make.
Yeah, you were like justifying it to yourself.
Exactly.
Live in the conversation.
And I think that it was 24 hours later that I received a text from my best friend. And she wrote me like a really long text. And it was basically her expressing that, babe, I love you. And I've been having this just, you know, this feeling that if I don't communicate to you about how I feel, I would regret it. And I want to take time to slow down and create this with you. And she shared that, you know, she wants to make sure that I'm not being taken advantage of, right? And she shared her side. And then she said, and if you have already decided and committed to this, then you have my full support. I'm there with you. And in that moment, it was like, this is why I love her. Because she's not someone who chooses to please you. She chooses to serve you. She's not someone who, you know, just say, like, she'll say to me, you look like shit today. And I would be like beaming. I'm like, oh my God, amazing. I love this. Like, because I want you to tell me the truth so that I can make an informed decision based on the truth. Yeah. And when she shared that with me and I said, I received this with so much gratitude. And I've decided, because I was so sick of being afraid, I've decided. And then she's like, then let's do it. You have my full support. And it was just amazing.
Beautiful.
And I did exactly that. And holy shit.
Life-changing.
Life-changing. I am a very different person. In some ways, I wish we actually had the conversation before so you can actually see the transformation.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you were in the midst of it. And I think sometimes in the midst of transformation, we don't know the words. We don't have the language. We don't have the tools yet. They're just rising up from us. And that's why, you know, it would have been beautiful to connect with you then, but now I'm connecting with you as like your highest self. And I just want to pause for a second and say, you know, I equally have come to so much of my life from a place of scarcity and insecurity and a lack of worthiness. And I'm dealing with that every day. Like just, you know, yesterday I was on a podcast of somebody who was my dream guest for season one. And she invited me to her podcast. And then I was doing a LinkedIn live with somebody. And at the end of the day, I was driving to my daughter's school to pick her up. And I was on such a high and just like listening to Beyonce and like in my power. And then this thought came up in me about that it has replayed in my head forever that people will be annoyed by me or people will hate me for being myself and for putting myself out there and sharing my perspective. And so, you know, your point of view has actually given me these kind of like micro doses of the exact medicine that I've needed. And I think you do that for so many people. And I just want to acknowledge that your healing is providing so much healing. I get so emotional sometimes in these conversations. I'm tearing up because, you know, when you're from the outside looking in, you see these just like goddesses, you know, like you see these incredible, deep, like sensual, beautiful women who seem so embodied. But then those women don't feel that at all. And it's so important, I think, to make sure that we are reinforcing each other in these ways, because the world can be hard and really fucking shitty sometimes. And, you know,
if we look for it, if we look for it, we will always find it. Right. And the same is true with the God in us. When you were sharing that and you were kind of emotional, oh, it's so beautiful. I love that. And the word namaste came up for me and how it translates as, you know, the God in me honors the God in you.
Beautiful.
And we catch glimpses of that. Mm-hmm. And when we do, it's, you know, one thing that I learned from my recent transformative experience, if you will, I went to this school, 9-day school by Byron Katie.
Beautiful.
And there was this man, oh, it was so incredible. This man stood up and he shared his gratitude, right? He shared himself about how the work had truly transformed his relationship with his daughter. And he started crying and he started wailing. It was like, like it was that, like that, right? And then she paused, Byron Katie paused, and she said, listen to that. That is a sound of gratitude. And I broke down because I often have that moment that you just had where when I talk about this, I just have tears in my eyes. Mm-hmm. I have that very often. And I never was able to put a name to it. It's like, I don't know what this is. I mean, I don't need to understand it, but I know it feels good. At least for me, it feels good. And now it's like, oh, it's just deep gratitude.
Yeah.
And it is.
And, you know, I think one, you know, when I wrote you the email, like at 10 o'clock last night, when I was finally getting my shit together, I wrote that I feel like you and I are in similar moments in our lives. Like I feel a lot of parallels and synchronicities. Like, you know, when you post something, it'll be something I've been thinking of that day. Mm. And there are a few instances of like screenshots I have on my phone where I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I've been feeling and thinking. And so it is gratitude. I have so much gratitude that I am able to do this work and connect with people like you and see the divine in you, but also get a glimpse of it within myself based on how you reflect back to me.
It's very powerful. The one thing that came up, I don't remember where I heard this the first time. It was a couple of years ago, but I heard this phrasing that sharing creates connection. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it stood out to me and I didn't really know exactly what it means.
Yeah.
But the more I look for it or the more I put my attention to it and share it, the more I realize that, yes, okay, this makes sense. When I share myself, when I share my truth, when I speak up, when I don't hold myself back, like when I choose to share on my social media, and you were like, wait, synchronicity. Yeah. And then you connect with me. That's what it is when we open ourselves up to receiving the connection that we all crave, we receive that connection, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with money.
Yes.
So, you know, it's really being conscious about the language that you use. And you actually mentioned something earlier that I wanted to slow down on, which is you were in your car, just dancing to Beyonce, right? Like just like this, bathing in this higher version of yourself.
Yes.
And then a thought came in. And then that low quality thinking brings you back down to this familiar space of, you know, unquestioned narratives that we have about ourselves, about money, about our relationships, about everything. But it starts with this thought that has not been examined.
Yeah. And it starts with, my understanding is it starts with worth. And I think, you know, worth is an interesting term. It is used so much, right? Our feeds and our brains and the literature we're reading are saturated with this idea of worth. And like maybe 6-7 years ago, I was working on a fintech brand, financial technology brand. And I'm a strategist, right? So one of the main things we had to do was evaluate people's relationship with money. And I always opt to do pretty provocative research to actually get to the core of why people feel the way they do. And so to kind of understand people's relationship with money, we spoke to a financial dominatrix and really started working into the idea of like worth as a quantifiable kind of monetary value. Like, what is this phone worth? What is this book worth? And how that connects to our own sense of worth and worthiness, and how we're almost applying the same sort of financial terminology to ourselves as humans. And so ever since then, I've had a fascination with this concept. And then, you know, we worked with LendingTree at Mechanism a year or two ago and, you know, came to this insight that societally, we are obsessed with money, but we ignore our own relationship with it. So we look out to, you know, what are those shows with like people selling, you know, multi-million dollar real estate in LA and New York. We look up to people like the Kardashians, you know, like Elon Musk is fascinating. And we have a fascination with wealth. But we very, very rarely, if ever, turn that fascination back to our own relationship to wealth and our own relationship to money. And so this idea or this question, I guess, this stream of questioning has been coming up within me so much for the past few years. And, you know, I come from an immigrant family that was rooted in a scarcity mindset, came to America and was like, how do we make a life here? You know, working in factories, like going to community college, night school, working in like, you know, convenience stores. And so I feel like I have a very fraught relationship with money and abundance and putting myself in the right mindset. But I'm in a moment where I don't have the words or the tools to even start to crack into it. And so when you posted on your Instagram, it just said, about me, I really love making money.
You said earlier about, and God, if I got this wrong, but mm-hmm. there was a word that I heard that you said, which was provocative.
Yes.
That stood out to me because yes. I am definitely someone, and I was just having this conversation with my coach. Deep down in my truth, I like to provoke.
Me too.
It's like that's my creative self-expression. Mm-hmm. And when I don't honor that, mm-hmm. it can be really frustrating for me.
Yeah.
But the problem with in the past is that when I do honor it, when you're being provocative, you're going to invite people to go against that.
Oh, yes.
Right. And I haven't worked on the muscles to deal with that yet. Same. So there was this kind of like competing commitments of wanting to honor my truth and not being able to handle might get thrown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you kind of have to go through that. And I actually went through that where, you know, I did it when I'm stronger. Mm-hmm. There's a pushback. I was able to hold space for myself to actually not abandon myself and create space for me to not go into shame and bathe in shame, but actually question, is it true? And mm-hmm. being with the inquiry kind yeah. of space. And then I found my truth, and it's like, I can hold both to be true.
Yes.
And that is what kind of continued to, you know, for me to grow into the space where I know that I like to provoke, and I know that it creates a powerful shift for the people that I'm speaking to.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to focus on that, because there are going to be another person who is going to do things another way that's going to speak to the people that I couldn't reach.
Yeah.
So we're doing our own work.
Yeah.
And there's healing in that work for ourselves. Mm-hmm. So with the going back to the money, the fascination piece was interesting. And the one thing that came up for me is, I think we're fascinated because we don't have it yet.
Yeah.
So when we don't have it because we're curious, we just want to know. And even though it's like, intellectually, I know that money doesn't bring me happiness and all mm-hmm. of that, but I just want to go and find out for myself.
Yes.
I want to touch that hot stove.
Yes.
To know what it feels like.
Right.
We just need to experience. And this is why being is so key to gaining wisdom and insights. It's not something that you can read. You got to experience it.
Mm.
You can't tell people what love feels like.
Yeah.
You can't tell people what meditation, when you reach a certain point, what it feels like. You can't try to teach someone to balance a bike.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like you can yes. try to capture it with your words, but it's not the same. So I think the fascination comes in from just wanting to experience it and finding out for myself what it means for me.
Ooh, that's really interesting, because, you know, if you've never experienced wealth, which many, 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 many of us have not, how do you know how to access it, right? And when people talk about calling something in, they say, feel what it would feel like. And it's very hard to feel what it would feel like, you know, if you grew up in a very different space where it not only was wealth not crossing your mind, but being able to walk into a Target and buy whatever you want wasn't crossing your mind. You know, there's many layers of quote unquote wealth and money and livability. But you're so right that some of us have never had access to that feeling. And, you know, exactly when I saw that post that like, you love money, I had picked up on a walk, like we have little, libraries that people put their used books in my neighborhood. And
oh, I love those oh, so much.
I love them. I find gems, like one person's trash is another person's treasure. But I found the book, The Millionaire's Mind. And it's an older book. And I was like, ooh, fascinating. And first I was like, ugh, is it weird that I'm picking this up? Because, you know, I immediately went to a place of, why do I care about not, I don't know, being a millionaire, like wanting to be, asking for that. And then I opened the book, and Sarita, I'm not kidding you, it was so male and white oriented. It made me sick. I have screamed, like, speaking of provocation, I was horrified. It said things like, the wealthiest people have wives that don't work. It said things like the wealthiest people surround themselves with the wealthiest people and live in homogenous neighborhoods, like just things that are the antithesis of what I believe. And it was very weird because I was like, wow, I don't relate to this whatsoever. Like, here I am trying to figure out the where we're going to live with our two kids because diversity is one of the most important things to me. And here I am believing or trying to believe as a woman of color in the world of business, like I can achieve the level of success some men have achieved. But then we're being fed this literature and this point of view that excludes us entirely. And that is the basis on which our understanding of wealth was built.
Yeah.
And so how do we start to question that?
So, for example, my old self would have picked up that book, experienced it the same way that you have experienced it,
mm-hmm.
and then just disgusted by it, continue to use that as an evidence to support the fact that this is why money is bad, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just reinforcing this belief that I have around money. And then I don't create money because I believe that fundamentally money is bad. See, look at all of these, white men who are so loud and creating mm-hmm. tragic in the world and all that. Now, the way I experience it would have been completely different. I would have picked up the book. I would have noticed what I noticed. And instead of going into see here all the evidence, I would have said, okay, now that I know what I know, how can I use this? How can I use what I learned from this in my own life? And there's a shift in the way that I operate in the world, rather than looking at the problems and focusing on the lack and the problem and kind of like, see, this is exactly is the like looking at the problem and amplifying it didn't help me.
Yeah.
But focusing on the opportunities mm-hmm. and the possibilities and mm-hmm. how I'm going to play in that space is what get me to get creative mm-hmm. and create. And there were so many thoughts earlier when you were sharing that I was really excited to tap into. What's coming up for you when I share that?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess my question coming out of that would be how? And I do want to pause and talk about this post of yours because it was extremely provocative. You never see people just say, I love money, ever. And, for me, it brought up so many feelings in me because I was like, whoa, how like bold and audacious. And then I was like, oh my God, this is Sarita saying that. I'm like fascinated to know what prompted her to like have this exclamation on social media. But then you talk about the first time you read A Job to Love by the School of Life. And I'm just going to read it and then we can extrapolate.
I love that so much because that was one of the things that I wanted to invite you to do is to read it. Because I think that right now, after having had that conversation, the listeners, you can certainly experience, I love making money, and just notice what's coming up for you when you mm-hmm. think about that. And then I want you to notice what's coming up for you as you hear what Ambika is about to read.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you say, the first time I read A Job to Love by the School of Life was just days before I hand in my resignation to a job of 7 years. When I got to the 12 pleasure points of work and read The Pleasure of Making Money, I started to cry. Those were tears of gratitude because I never felt so understood. I want to share with you in case you too identify with the pleasure of making money and need a reframe so you could embrace this beautiful nature of who you are. And I would love to understand what that experience was like for you. What made you feel understood, and what made you specifically embrace this idea of loving making money? You loved the time when you were 9 and made biscuits for a stall, sold them to people, and turned a profit. It wasn't really the money. It was the excitement of seeing that people really liked what you'd done and were happy to prove it by giving up something unambiguously valuable. Next time, you added different colored icing, and it was fascinating to see which colors people went for and which didn't appeal. You learned and made you feel confident. You get a thrill out of guessing correctly what other people require, though it's not just guesswork, of course. It's because you're always on the lookout for little revealing signals that people don't even know they're sending. You love profit because it is, in many ways, an achievement of psychology, the reward for correctly guessing the needs of others ahead of the competition. You wander through the world aware of how much you could be altered if you walk along a street you might think that early 20th century eyesore could be flattened and a block of beautiful brick buildings put up in its place. You notice a pile of cardboard boxes waiting to be recycled and think, isn't there some other use for these? You grasp that every inefficiency is a business waiting to be born. The special appeal of money for you is the endorsement it brings of your insights and skills. You love the fact that this year's profits are higher than the year before is a confirmation that you were right in a myriad of little decisions you took over many months. It's the clearest proof of the soundness of your judgment. Not everyone sees this, but for you, making money is an intellectual pleasure. You enjoy understanding your clients' needs better than they do themselves. You like coming up with a solution to a problem before other people have even realized there is a problem to be solved. You like that making money is connected to a set of down-to-earth virtues: understanding, hard work, efficiency, discipline. You know it's nice to have a bit of money. It's pleasant using an express lane at the airport and having the means to buy a work of art at a friend's exhibition. But you are clear in your own mind that this isn't a pleasure of working. It's a pleasure that comes as a consequence of work. What you enjoy about your job is the process of generating a profit by applying your insights to the problems of the world. And that is the excerpt.
Thank you for slowing down and reading that for us.
Of course. I felt like I was reading to a class as a 9-year-old stumbling over words, but I think everyone got the point.
It was perfect.
Oh my goodness.
And I know it's going to help a lot of people reframe the way that they experience creating money.
This part about what you enjoy about your job is the process of generating a profit by applying your insights to the problems of the world. That struck me so deeply, because when I first launched this podcast, I was so afraid of it being seen as a self-serving, egocentric pursuit. And as I think about my dream for the future, it is more aligned with this podcast and my book than it is with the corporate career I have built and the corporate career that has provided me money for my entire adult life. But I think this reframe of applying your insights to the problems of the world and that being what generates income and money, in order for you to further apply your insights to the problems of the world, takes money out of something that is egocentric and into something that is more altruistic. Mm. And I deeply appreciate that, because for someone like me who has these blocks around money, I need to be made to feel that I am making money for others, that my work and I am in service of others, that if I'm on social media, you know, talking into my phone, which, you know, as I mentioned to you, Sarita, at the beginning, makes me like horrifyingly uncomfortable. It's not about me just like having an ego and being out there. It is about my thoughts and ideas being in service of other people. But why do we feel, you and I and many, many, many others, that we are not worthy of the attention just in and of ourselves, and that we are not worthy of the money unless the money is in service of other people?
I think that it goes, like, the foundation of it, when I think about it, is that we spend too much time focusing on fear and creating from a place of fear. What if they think that? What if they think I'm egocentric? What if they think that I'm greedy? And when we focus on the fears, we don't create, we don't share, we don't make more money and give more money. Mm-hmm. We're just stuck doing nothing about it. But when we focus on the why, the love of serving others, the love of creating change in the world, the love of deep connection and this meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
When you connect with the why you do what you do, it propels you to do that thing. And then it doesn't matter what other people think, because you're experiencing the results, the impact that you're creating that continues to drive you. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem is we don't spend enough time. We don't create time for ourselves to connect with that pot, mm-hmm. the possibility, the love, the higher version of ourselves. Mm-hmm. We spend so much time connecting with the lower version, the past, the all of the things I've done wrong.
Oh, yes.
And then we bring that into the present, and then we create it in the present, and then our future is just a recycled past. It's just more shame, more sadness, more regret, more fear, more of that. And that doesn't work, right? So I really think that we take the time, dedicate the time to connect with what is it that you want to create in the world, and you know, why are you so passionate about that? Why is that important to you? And when you get really clear on that, then you're like, I want to go and do it. Because this why is louder than the fear. Mm-hmm. And I think that with self-worth, you know, again, we have sort of like a self-image, right? Like an understanding of who we are. We have a self-image. We have an ideal version of ourselves, mm-hmm. who we could be, who we want to be. And when those two are not in alignment, our self-esteem goes down. And then we go into this, like, again, connecting with the fear of like, oh, but who am I to do that? And I couldn't do this. I've done that before. And we're just in this place, stuck again. Mm-hmm. But when we begin to actually connect with the ideal version of ourselves and mm-hmm. recognizing that actually that's within me, and I see the evidence to support that, mm-hmm. like, look at this time when I was really generous with my, you know, my community, or how I celebrate my clients, or how I would, you know, the way that I choose to spend money, whatever it is, if you look for evidence to support that, then you're going to live more in congruent with your mm-hmm. ideal version. And when mm-hmm. that is in alignment with who you are, then you just feel more worthy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that the time that you choose to spend are going to come from service.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know that if you make more, you can give more.
Yes, yes.
Like, I remember when it really, you know, I remember my partner, you know, I talked to him a lot about being in integrity with our word. Mm-hmm. And I practiced that. And he, you know, was really inspired by me, and he'll share with me, like, I'm inspired by you, and we share that with each other. It's wonderful. And he basically had made a commitment to himself, and he didn't tell anyone this. and he shared it with me, even though he wasn't going to share it, but I'm so glad he shared. He made a commitment with himself that he's going to donate 10K. Well, it was like X amount of what he earned to like a nonprofit organization. And it was $10,000 that day, right? Wow. This is a couple of years back. When he did that, and he was so proud of himself for making that commitment, right? For me, what came up was, if I don't make money, I could never make that type of donation.
Yeah.
I couldn't give 10K to a charity of my choice because I haven't made enough to take care of myself. So if I want to be someone who's able to give more, then I got to make more.
Yeah.
And I continue to rewrite my story, my narrative around why I shouldn't ask for more money.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yeah.
It's so interesting because through the podcast, I mean, through my work, this is what I consider my work, my life's work. I have connected with so many incredible, successful women. And one of the things that comes up somehow, whether implicitly or explicitly in every conversation, is building an intergenerational wealth for women and how men, you know, have passed opportunity down to each other for generations. And money, whether we like it or not, is the currency of influence. And influence isn't a dirty word. Influence is what a lot of people seek, whether it's the influence to help others overcome their insecurities, whether it is the influence to convince a client to take the more sustainable route, whether it is the influence to make young women feel like body positive. So influence itself is what is needed in the world to move the world forward. And influence has been in the wrong hands. And so women need to feel that if they make enough money, if they believe in themselves enough to make that money, they can start to create the change that we need in the world. Because with more women in power, and not just women, right? Historically, excluded groups of people in power, we can fundamentally change the world. And that why of why I need to make money is profound and such a worthy, to go back to that word, goal and ambition. And in one of my previous conversations with Amani Duncan, who's incredible, she said basically something to the extent of like, if we are not ambitious, how are we ever going to create more opportunities for women of color? How are we ever going to pour more empathy into the world? How are we ever going to, you know, flip the narrative of what is important away from this like vapid power, wealth for wealth's sake, you know, influence as a form of oppression into a more generative, humane space? And if nothing else, that is why we need to make money. And that is why it is worthy to love money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, also what came up for me is self first,
mm-hmm.
right? Choosing self first. Same kind of concept with money. Choosing yourself first is not selfish, because if you're trying to give, you know, what's in your cup and your cup is empty,
mm-hmm.
you're not really giving.
Yeah.
You're not actually creating any impact.
Mm-hmm.
You're just living in this illusion that you are, and you're exhausted.
Yeah.
Right. So even for me, rewriting, like, I don't usually take calls before 11 a.m. because in the morning, I want to wake up without an alarm clock. I want rest to be number one. I want me to focus on me first, to really just, you know, do yoga, do movement, meditate, whatever it is that I need, so that when I show up, my cup is not only full, but it's overflowing. And I give from the overflow. I never take it out of my cup. And this is something that I learned from my coach, and I see in the way that he creates and how you create an overflow is you understanding your values, and you take actions, you live in alignment with your values. Because when you do that, you're fulfilled like this, right? Me being in this conversation is filling my cup because it's in alignment with my values, because I know that you share the same values as me. I've been in hundreds of coaching conversations that don't give me money. Like, I invite people to be in a conversation. I ask them to create a commitment with them by asking them to choose a charity of their choice, to donate money to, send me the receipt, because I want them to pay in order to pay attention, to actually exercise what it's like to say, I'm committed to that, and I'm going to do it, and actually be your word and do it. And then when we get into the conversation, you already feel like, I've done the thing that I said I would do, and now I'm here in this conversation, and it's a life-changing conversation. So I've done hundreds and hundreds of, you know, conversations that didn't give me money, but it fills my cup because I love serving people. And I have the space and the ability to do that because I created a system in my life so that my clients who's willing to pay attention to their lives and create the shift that they needed to shift is what creating this opportunity for me to be connect with other people without needing to be paid.
Yeah.
So they're already in them working with me. They're creating impact, ripples effect in other people's lives. So when someone comes to me and you know, someone who had a conversation with me for free a year ago, and they write me an email saying, Sarita, since that conversation, it was, oh my God, I've created shift. Like it impacted me in such a powerful way. I share that with my clients and I say, you made this possible.
Yeah.
Because of your commitment to put money down, to commit to yourself, to show up, and for me to have the space to create this with other people. So now there's this kind of energy that we kind of like, I don't even have words for it, but there's a flow in which I dance in with my clients.
Yeah. And it's so interesting. In the book that we were talking about earlier, A Job to Love from the School of Life, he opens the book by saying, historically, people would scoff at the idea that you should find purpose in your work. People were out in the fields, you know, tending to crops, doing all sorts of, you know, what we could consider like more like labor oriented work versus intellectual work. And it was to make money, and money was the end all be all. And there has been a convergence, and, you know, Esther Perel talks about it from a relationship point of view of, you know, we expect our spouse to be our best friend, our confidant, our mentor, our teacher, our blah, blah, blah. And really, like, your spouse is your spouse. And it's those expectations of them being everything that dampen a relationship and honestly kill passion and sex, which is her thesis. But in the School of Life, he says that we are in a moment of reconciliation where we want to your point, fill our cups and fill our wallets simultaneously. And I think, you know, our collective consciousness is still kind of split because we are the first generation, maybe the second, to want fulfillment out of our work, to want purpose out of our work. And so we're not asking ourselves, does it fill my wallet or does it fill my cup? We are saying, is it possible for me to fill my wallet as I'm filling my cup? And that seems to be the balance you found in your life and career?
Yeah, I genuinely believe that the number in your bank account is a reflection of the values that you bring into the world.
Say
And
more.
so, you know, people pay because they find value in what you're giving, right? Like if you have a headache, if you have a really, really, really bad headache, and someone says, I have this medicine that can take it away, you'll probably pay a lot of money to get rid of that headache. And it's an exchange, right? If you don't have a headache, you might not pay for it because you don't need it. I don't find value in that. And that's okay. So when you find a way to add value, there are going to be people who are going to be willing to pay for it. And it depends on how much they're willing to pay for it to get that thing. Yeah. And for me, one of the reasons I, you know, the price tag of my work is not the price tag of who I am. No one can pay what I'm worth. I can't pay what you're worth. And it's really about, I mean, I know that it's about the transformation that I bring, but really for me, it's how you choose to show up because you have skin in the game.
Yeah.
So I didn't, like, if I didn't pay $25,000 for the 10 sessions with my coach, I am someone who probably, like, I'll show up, I'm ambitious, but I would play differently and I wouldn't lean into places where I'm really afraid because I've got nothing to lose. If it's a $50 an hour session, I'm like, oh, I'm too afraid. I'm not going to do it. But when it's $25,000, you're like, shit, I better do it.
Yeah.
And when I engage with fear, that's when I realize it's an illusion. And the more I engage with fear, the more clear it is that it's an illusion. And then I feel comfortable going in and doing the thing that I was afraid of doing before. And, you know, so to come back to the bank account being the reflection of you adding value, for me, I know that I need it to pay that amount for me to really show up for myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my clients who pay that, they show up in a way that they have never showed up before in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And the values that they receive from that, the transformation that got created, it's like you look back. And for me, my own experience, when I look back to, at the time, it was like, holy shit, $25,000 is a lot of money. Like for 10 sessions, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Now it's like, okay, I got inner peace, liberation, deep connection with my partner, myself, my family. I've created a community. I made more money than I have ever created. I will feel some of the fears and engage with it. And I gain so much more confidence. I am courageous. I have all of these new skills. I walk into the room and able to speak. I'm able to say yes to this.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before I would have hide from all of these things. I feel so much love, peace, joy in my life. And that for $25,000, all that and more, that's nothing. I would pay so much more than that. So, you know, and I did. I continued to work. I was like, I want to work with my coach. This, I leveled up in a way I never thought possible. What else is available? My work with him when I first committed, it's actually $86,000 for a whole year to be his apprentice. Mm-hmm. But at the time I thought it was 100 because it was, as a client, it's 100, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, I need to create 100K.
Yeah.
And of course, like I didn't commit to it right away because I'm like, how the hell am I going to do that?
Yeah.
Like that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to do it, but I chose to do it because I got a glimpse of what was possible when I don't let the low quality thinking, the stories hold me back. I was able to create the impact that I have created in so many lives. And I'm like, I want to create more of that. I want to shift the way that we experience the world. And I did it in 3 months. Like I was committed. I made it a game in 3 months. I created 100K. I got my friend to drive me to my coach's house, dropped the check, changed my life. And by the time I get there to work with him, I already leveled up because I was someone who already made 100K. And you know what? Scarcity mindset went away because now I am someone who can trust that, hey, if shit really hits the fan, I know I can create it.
Wow.
So I don't go, it's like money is not, I don't go in for the money. It's not how I operate.
Mm-hmm.
But the money comes because I add value, because I create spaciousness in my life to take care of myself first, to really slow down. I don't have burnouts. I can focus with my clients. I can be available to them and support them. And the more transformation I create, the more money I make.
Mm-hmm.
Money is just a result.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so exciting.
I am blown away.
And it's all from here, truly. It's just the story that you tell yourself. So you just got to let go of the stories that are no longer serving you, because it's not about you becoming this version of you that's amazing. It's actually you letting go of the shitty story so you can get to who you actually already are, mm-hmm. which is this whole and resourceful and creative being. And there's nothing that lights me up more than being in a conversation with my clients and slowly loosening the grip of that, of those stories together, and then them coming back and sharing the magics that they have experienced in their lives.
Oh my goodness. People can't see us, but we are both just like beaming.
Smiling
from ear
job.
To ear.
Speaking of a job to love, huh?
Oh, I am so moved by this conversation. This is so inspirational to me as somebody who has only felt as worthy as the job she is in. And the job she has always been in has been a job that is about other people and other things, and never mm-hmm. about looking inward or helping others look inward. And, you know, I shared this with you at the beginning, but I'm also in the midst of a big work, vocation, career, purpose transition, and money has been a huge aspect of that thought process. And I have felt ashamed about putting money at the forefront of what I am looking for. But I do know deep down that I also use money in a very generative, and I'm using that word a lot because it's come up for me so much lately. But I do use money in a very generative way. I do use money to fill my cup and then pour into others. I do use money to invest in what I believe is going to move the world forward and push the ideas out into the world that I feel will help people and society. And so it's been so helpful to just really internalize that through this conversation and realize that money is a tool. And then to what you said, it is just an output. But there is a whole lot of other beauty and life that sits within those two poles. And that's what we need to focus on.
Absolutely. And it's a conscious choice, right? You actually have to put it into your calendar to create space for you to connect with that and be with that. It's just like going to the yoga practice. We got to actually create space and time for us to connect with all the ways in which we have created impact in the world and Because when we do that, we create more of that rather than being stuck and then not doing anything. And I mean, this is why coaching is really powerful, because that's what you're doing. You're essentially investing in yourself by committing to showing up to, say, my coach is a 90 minute conversation. You know, once a week we come together and we really dedicate the time for me to look and celebrate myself, and also, you know, what else can I do to make the impact that I'm creating even more powerful, right? So I'm investing in myself for that, and I create more impact as a result. Mm-hmm. So it's an investment worth making, truly. There were a couple of things that came up when you were speaking too. We could go on for like 5 hours. And
yeah, I know, this is, oh, same. I have so many notes in my notebook of all the things that you've been sparking for me, but oh my goodness, I want to be conscious of your time. So maybe we will have to have a part two one day.
Yeah. One thing I do want to share, actually, I just remember that came up, is, you know, when you share that you are someone who connects your worth with your work. And like, I resonate with that so deeply. When I was a graphic designer at that job, it was like, if I have a deadline with a client or even with an internal team with my boss in 2 days, I will take up all the time.
Yeah.
All of my, like, I will give up yoga. I will give up everything spend more time to make sure that what I produce is my best, like perfect. Yeah. So that, you know, so that I'm okay, so that I'm safe, because my worth is tied to it. And, you know, when I remember the first time I raised my fee, when I quit my job and I was still doing graphic design, but then I begin to notice that I don't ask for enough. I remember sitting with that and doubling my price, my fee. And I remember thinking, okay, what would be the amount that will allow me the spaciousness that I need to actually pull my heart out into this job, this project that I'm on? Because I know that if there's anything that I bring to the table, is I'm devoted, I'm committed, I want to do the best work for you, I'm here to support you, I will be available for you. Like, that's just who I am. And it requires a lot of time, because I also do a lot of research. I put in the work for that. So I got to price myself in a way that creates the spaciousness that I need to do that work. And then, you know, the people who see that and see the value in that will be okay with paying that. And when I raised my fee and I put that out, they said yes, just like that. And I'm like, wait, what? All this time that I thought that I would have to really, like, I don't know, explain myself, like, I didn't have to. And they see it. And how do I show up? I'm not resentful. I'm not like, oh, I have to get this done. I have another deadline, and I'm not just getting it done because I need to get it done. It's like, I get to work on this.
Yes.
I get to create this. And, you know, energy translates. So it translates in the work that you put out, in the interaction, in the everything, in your communication. So we want to ask for what we need in order for us to really show up our best version of ourselves. And the people who see value in that will pay for that. And that was one of the first shifts that I had before I, like, really, really shifted and got myself the coach. But yeah, I just wanted to share that because I think that would be really valuable for people.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast, I mean, it's called Corner Office Breakdowns. You know, we are people who often do have corporate-ish, structured, 9-to-whatever jobs. And I think many of us are desperate and hopeful for a different way of working and living. I know I am. And that was what pushed me to even begin to have all of these conversations around you know, feeling hard feelings in the workplace and how you transform workplaces to be built around the people versus people having to morph around a workplace. And, you know, this is filling me with so much confidence and hope, because there are people who are living the life that they always wanted. And that is available to all of us if we understand what it is we want, which I will raise my hand first. Like, that in and of itself is very hard. Like, what do you want? I don't know. Not this, but I don't really know what else.
It's kind of fascinating with that, is we tend to know what we don't want.
Yeah.
And the one thing that really stood out for me when I first get into psychology and coaching and all that is, if I tell you not to think a purple elephant.
Yes.
And what we do is we go, I don't know what I want, but I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be anxious. I don't want to be broke. I don't want to be depressed. And what that does is, just like the purple elephant, it brings it up to the brain. And what do we do? We look for it. Anxious, depression, broke. And we walk into the world looking for evidence to support that. I don't belong. I'm not good enough. What if people think that I'm, you know, too much? Or then we go in the world and look for that. Mm-hmm. So we want to really slow down and examine the language of our thinking. And when we shift that, I want peace, I want love, I want joy, I want creativity, I want connection, I want impact, I want service. Like, even I can see your face lit up when I say those words. It's so powerful. So if we can be conscious in how we speak and create from that place, it's just, you create a completely different reality, because you experience a very completely different reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think, so one of the challenges that I grapple with all of the time is it possible to achieve what you're talking about in an existing system, in an existing workplace, in an existing environment? Or do you fundamentally feel like it is something that needs to be of our own creation?
I think it can exist in the system, in that structure, depending on your values. So, for example, one of my values is freedom. Mm-hmm. I need freedom. And, you know, success and wealth for me, the other day I was just defining this, because I woke up on a Monday morning and I spent almost 2 hours watering my plants, talking to my plants like a crazy person, which I love, just wiping the plants down. I'm like, it's so cute. I love it. And to me, like, I was walking around doing that and I'm like, this is success. This is wealth to me. On a Monday morning, I can choose to spend an hour or two with my plants. And what it does is it makes me a very happy person. Mm-hmm. And I'm calm and I'm loving and I am connected with who I am. And then when I show up to my coaching calls, it's like I bring all of that and I get creative, not reactive. Mm-hmm. I'm not like, oh my God, I don't have enough time, and you know, like, I need to get this on it. Like, not that, right? So if your values are, you know, teamwork, you thrive in an environment where there's structure and you do better at that, then you will flourish in that. So I think that it really depends on the person. If we, you know, a lot of us, our values, if we really question our values, you know, and we realize that actually money is not my values, what it does, what it brings, like, I love celebrating my friends. I love paying full price for my, one thing that my friend taught me, the same friend, she's amazing. Shout out to Marissa. when I first started painting, I was so used to my friend asking me for discounts, right? Like my younger friends, you know, like, can you give me a discount? And totally. I'm like, of course, you're my friend. Marissa paid full price always.
Yeah.
And she taught me that when you're a friend, you don't ask for discount because you want to show your friend that you are worthy of 100% of that. And that really stuck with me. And for me, having the money that I have doing what I love, I get to create that with my friends, with my clients, with my family. I sent them things. I get to shower them with whatever it is that money allows me to do as well.
And yes,
it's so awesome. So yeah, I do think that it can exist in the system. But if you just connect with your values and you realize that money is not your values, you might not go and work for a corporate place that, you know, value money. Right. So then maybe if there's not enough demand in that, then that might not exist anymore and we'll create something new. So I think it's just really about slowing down and connecting with yourself and going inward and cleaning that up so that you don't, you don't project into the world and create the same reality that you've been living in.
Yeah. So as a parting thought, one of the things that I really like to give the people who have spent their energy with us for an hour, and I'm sure have gotten so much out of it in the same way we have given so much of ourselves to it, is just a really practical way to start applying this thinking. And so I think it at least in my understanding, it starts with this exercise of looking inwards and considering your values. Is there anything specific you would tell people to do if this conversation really spoke to them, if they're like, this is what I need, besides hiring you as their coach, which everyone should do? There are no discount codes available. but of course, I'll put all of your information for everyone to access. But just, you know, what would be your one takeaway for somebody who felt so nourished by this conversation and has been needing to hear something like this? What should they go off from here and do?
God, I have like 20 different things I want to share.
It doesn't have to be one. It can be a few.
I think that I know it's going to feel really difficult for a lot of you to do this because of the world that we live in, but slow down, create time to connect with yourself. Think about 12 months from now. It's you know, July 26th, 2024. It's been a year since you listened to this podcast, and you look back and you created such an extraordinary life. Like it has just been so wonderful. When you look back, what did you create? What did you do? What occurs? Get clear on that. Just like what happened that made the last 12 months so extraordinary. And then what is 1%? What is one thing I can do today that can get me 1% closer to that? And just do that. 1%. Don't do 5. Don't do 3. Just 1%. What is the one simplest thing I can do today to get me closer to that? And then repeat that again tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And I promise you, your life will change.
Wow. Oh my goodness. I have tears in my eyes again. Whew. This was a very emotional conversation for me. It strikes such a deep chord.
Thank you for receiving that.
Thank you so much, Sarita. This was amazing.
Thank you.
We're so lucky to have you in our world and in our orbit.
I feel the same way. Thank you for creating this space for me to show up and feel safe showing up. I think that's really important. It's such a skill set, you know? It's, you're mastering that for sure. And thank you for creating that for many more women and people to share themselves with the world.
Oh, I feel very grateful to be able to do that. It gives me the most joy of any work I have ever done, besides being a mother, probably up there around the same. But thank you so much. Sending you all the love in the world. And everyone, follow Sarita. I will tag all of her stuff and hire her. Invest in yourself.
Invest in yourself.
It's the most important thing we can do, and ourselves are all we have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ambika.
Bye.
Bye.